ecstasy, caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
This is Comics Therapy, Episode 2. Today we'll be talking about three books from July 31st, 2013. Bedlam number 8, Sex number 5, and High Crimes number 4. So you haven't read them yet, we'll catch you on the flip side since this is a spoiler-heavy podcast. If you're brave and bold, then listen on. We promise it'll be a good time.
Hey, Comics Therapy, it's John from the Earth 2 podcast, your rival podcast. Oh, by the way, we're rivals. I just informed you of that. I have a comics confession. I considered myself a pretty big Spider-Man fan for a long time. But I do have a confession to make. I have only read about 4 or 5 of the Ditko Lee issues. I have them all on a CD-ROM and I've put through them, but have never really sat down to actually read the run. And don't know if I'll ever get time to do it with all the comics I have to read. And actually, I've read even less of the Lee Romita Sr. run, so maybe I'm not as big of a fan as I thought, but thanks for letting me get that off my chest. I do feel a lot better.
Hey kids, welcome to Comics Therapy. As we'll remind you each week, neither Aaron nor I is a licensed psychotherapist. We'll be discussing some serious mental anguish, drug addiction, and yes, sexual dysfunction from this week's comics, but we urge you not to take any of the following banter as serious medical advice, or even good life choices.
This week, we're introducing Nerd Confessions in between segments. Are you itching to get a deep, dark, geeky secret off your chest? Like you don't actually like Star Wars? Or you've never read any Superman comics? Then give us a call. 541-357-6922 is our voice line. Or you can call us on Skype. Comics Therapy is the account name. And we might just feature your confession on a future episode. You know what? Catharsis is cool.
If you're looking for us in between episodes, Aaron can always be found on Twitter at Aaron Myers.
And Andrea sometimes graces us with her presence at Andrea Shock. The Comics Therapy website is comicstherapy.com. That's where you can find all these links and info really easy. So with that out of the way, Andrea, how was your week?
Kind of crazy. Last big push with the summer work. Last session of kids, students, I had middle school kids this time, super, super high intensity, and then I ended my week with a really restful, not so much weekend babysitting. In addition to my 8-year-old, I had a 4-month-old and an almost 3-year-old. So I'm pretty wired, mostly due to sleep deprivation, something I'm sure you're pretty familiar with.
Yep, welcome to my world.
Yeah, babies are hard.
Yes, they always want, like, all your free time. It's like you're trying to read comics or something, and they're like, I'm starving. Or
sleep. Sleeping is good. Sleeping, I wouldn't necessarily consider free time. They also want that. They're so demanding.
Mm-hmm. That's how they grow. They just use your energy.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, the milk is just lubrication. The rest of it's just psychic vampire.
That just took it into a super creepy direction.
Uh-huh. That's the show, right?
Often, yes.
Uh-huh.
But in the midst of what I was working on and occasionally seeing my family more than I wanted to this weekend, I had a chance to read a couple of books. I actually read books for Owen and Charles over at Panel Culture. I read a couple of books with them, books that we're not going to talk about over here, which is exciting. So What did you have going on this week? Did you read any comics?
I read a lot of comics because it was a big week. It was a big week for comics.
It's always a big week for comics with you.
That's true. Next week's going to even be even bigger, but that's getting ahead of us. And let's see. I got a bunch of Retrofit comics. Retrofit's this company. They're a small publisher do a bunch of cool comics. Box Brown does the majority of them. I think he's kind of in charge of the publishing side of it. This comics store in, where are they? They're in Washington, D.C., Big Planet Comics.
Was the picture you posted with something from Virginia, right?
Yeah. They're doing all the publishing now for Retrofit. And
awesome.
I bought a bunch of comics from them. So I got a bunch of Box Brown and some other stuff, comics to read. So that was pretty cool.
Prints or are these brand new?
Yeah, I mean, well, a lot of them are either they're older ones that they're just the prints of. You know,
okay,
it's not like an Image publisher, so I don't know if they're print on demand or if they just did a limited run and they've got some sitting around. They're not high print run kind of stuff. You know, it's very indie. But I got a pretty special toy this week, and it's just.
Do you want to share with the folks at home what toy you got?
It's just for Daddy. I finally bought a ROM Space Knight toy.
I don't understand what's ROM.
Yeah. We've already been over this. So ROM was.
I'm excited for you.
That's
good. I know it was like a major bucket list item for you.
Sure. Now I can die.
Well,
that's all I needed.
Yikes.
But it's kind of ridiculous. But it's such a. I mean, it's a well-made toy, but I could imagine being like a 10-year-old kid and getting it and be like, this thing doesn't do anything. But they're, you know, the comics spawned out of it, and ROM's sort of an obsession for me. So having the toy was kind of a nice kind of check off my list. Now I need to obsess about something else.
So I know this is for you, but is this something that you think that you'll share with your boys as they get older?
It's so fragile. It's not something that can even be played with. I'm just going to have to get a display case for it, and they can look at it, and then one day one of them will grab it and destroy it, and then, you know, that's how you get on the news, I guess.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
Bummer.
That's all right. It's the price to pay of having kids, I guess. In a way, just getting it kind of fills that, okay, now I got it, now I can move on. Like, the preservation of it is almost secondary in a way.
Wow.
Does that make sense, kind of?
No, not at all. I don't relate to your collecting anything. I don't disdain it either, but I just don't. I don't have that bug in me. So
yeah.
I think it's really awesome, but I don't. I guess I don't subscribe to the thrill of the chase when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's better not to have that because you just waste a lot of money on things. But. I mean, some things I buy, like art, I buy because I like to look at the art. But, like, some things I like to acquire, like, you know, like, say a run of comics. I could buy the collections of a lot of stuff, but I like having the issues because I like hunting down the issues. And almost then when I've read them all and I have all the issues, then they just can kind of sit in the box for the most part because the hunt's over, you know.
Okay.
So it's kind of the same with, like, toys like this. So it's like I got a ROM toy. It works. I've got pictures of it that prove I have it, and almost like the bragging rights are there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the need is kind of satiated. But then there's the next thing. So it's never really satiated. It's just always moving on. But that's kind of the psychosis, I think, too.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
What is the next thing? Have you identified what your next target is?
I don't know. I'm trying not to like get into collecting toys because it's ridiculous with kids to collect toys that your kids can't play with.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talk about psychosis.
Right. So I'm trying to resist that because that's just going to be therapy bills for them of talking about like, well, my dad would always get toys and then he would take them from us and then put them up on shelves so we can never play with them.
Right.
So I'm trying not to do that. Like if I do buy toys now, I usually go with Luke to the store and buy things that are unpackaged so we can play with them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they're in the box, it's like, no, we can't open it up, and I want to stick it on the wall or something like that, and I'm trying not to do that too much.
That's a fun thing to do at cons because they're always super cheap that way. Well,
mm-hmm.
mostly super cheap that way.
Mm-hmm.
So Avi and I had a blast going through boxes looking for figures for him that were $3, $6. Ooh, we splurged and got one that was $10.
Yeah.
And then it was something that he had ownership of and that he could play around with, but that obviously I don't have that bug, so I wasn't concerned about the mint or not quality of this toy that he was playing around with. Good
yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, but I've always, it doesn't matter. There's always something for me to collect. It's kind of endless. I mean, it's just always how it's been with me. So
you should get that looked out.
Well, yeah, maybe I'll talk to a therapist about it.
Should we talk some comics?
I think that's a good idea.
I've never read Sandman by Neil Gaiman, and I'm not a huge fan of The Dark Knight Returns. Thank you.
Our first book this week is Bedlam Number 8, which Aaron made me read because he is a bad, bad man. Bedlam is published by Image Comics. It's written by Nick Spencer with art by Ryan Brown and cover by Fraser Irving. Honestly, this title is not something that I would ordinarily pick up. But I've been able to work past the extreme violence and disturbing content because the premise is fascinatingly fucked up and very well done.
Yeah, so I'm glad you read this, and I think this is a book that maybe not a lot of people are picking up or fell off people's radar. It's a pretty fascinating study of a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give people a little bit of a background, if they haven't been reading it, it's the story of Matter Red, who is the world's greatest serial killer, I guess we could say, and the story of the city of Bedlam. And it's sort of, I guess it's sort of dreamlike in a lot of ways, the way it's written. So it's not necessarily super linear in terms of the world building, but it's essentially the story of Matter Red's redemption or rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
That it starts with him, a massacre, and him dying supposedly, and then not being dead and being rehabilitated as a regular person. And the story evolves, and we don't have to get too spoilery about it because I think what we want to talk about has too much to do with the details of the plot.
Right.
But so what did you think? What have you gotten out of these first eight issues?
Well, I have a personal struggle with how much sympathy I am feeling towards Matter, especially, I guess maybe not especially, exclusively after the opening massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And as we see him in this post-rehabilitated state, and really that word is somewhat misleading. He's still on medication. He's been out of society for 10 years. He is a total mess and is seeking out interactions and opportunities now that are absolutely unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And putting himself into physical harm and emotional harm because he is looking for something, probably a series of somethings. But I feel bad for the guy. I think part of that is because there is such a clear separation between the before and after Matter.
Yeah.
In name, in appearance, in everything.
Is it kind of like the sympathy comes from like a lion that's been kind of caged? You know,
sure.
Like where you have this deadly animal, but it's no longer a threat, and it's been sort of castrated in that way.
Right, or a venomous snake who's had its venom sacs
the fangs removed or something. Yeah.
Right, something that is, we're told that he's physically unable to cause violence. That's not entirely true because he intercepts a violent weapon and causes injury to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some gray, I think there's lots of gray area in this book that is so beautifully colored, primarily in black and white and red.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of possibility for this rehabilitation to be a ruse, but not necessarily on Matter's side. I think that the motivations behind it are, I think, where we're going to see some of the plot points that we're not going to necessarily talk about right now. Develop. And I think that's the story part in addition to the character that has made me a little bit more forgiving in terms of the graphic content itself. Like
mm-hmm.
I can look past the disgust of some of the things, the crimes themselves that are committed and alluded to, because of the intrigue with his current situation and the circumstances that got him there.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm wondering too, is like, is this a true, is he rehabilitated? And I think that's the question. It's like, can you rehabilitate something, or can you change the nature of something?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the question of the book, you know.
Absolutely.
Like,
but,
and I think that's like a lot of, you know, psychologists would even debate, like, can a child molester be cured?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, for me personally, I don't think they can. I think it's part of your nature at a certain point. And you can resist urges, but I don't think you can be cured of those urges. It's hardwired.
I don't know. It gets into a really dangerous territory there, because in some cases, when you speak about behaviors that are extreme and how you can't unlearn them, I mean, at what line does a behavior go into the unlearned side of the equation, right? If
yeah.
I have a bad habit and I work super hard to fix that bad habit, and I've read that it takes something like 8 weeks of consistently doing the opposite of the bad habit to develop a new, better habit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, say it's something really benign. Why couldn't that same logic be applied to something much, much more destructive? I don't mean to call that very, very destructive behavior, child molestation, a habit. I'm not trying to reduce it to that. But
mm-hmm.
I am wondering, like, where on the spectrum does the switch go from something that can be overcome to something that truly is within the nature of a person?
Well, yeah, I think this is the problem we face in this stage of our evolution, is we don't understand how the brain works well enough, that we can't, like, I'm a computer nerd by trade. So it's like, I think of the brain almost as like a computer, in that if you could figure out the programming, if you could figure out the areas of the brain where here are the switches that a killer, you know, here's the stuff in a killer's brain that gets messed up. This is what a normal brain, quote unquote, somebody who doesn't have those urges, and here's, you know, a killer's brain. And here's the programming we need to alter in order to change those paths. I think, you know, maybe 100 years from now, we'll be able to do that stuff, but we'll all be robots by then anyway. That's a different discussion. But, you know,
isn't that sort of implied with what happens to matter anyway, is that whatever that was in his brain that was causing those urges has been physically removed or studied in such a way as to be manipulated so that he doesn't do it any further?
So is that kind of the internal debate of this book right now? Are we going to reveal, like, is that the, I think maybe that's part of it. It's like, you can remove maybe the physical part of somebody that makes them a serial killer, but is part of that, like, even go deeper? Like, is this a discussion of, like, physicality versus the soul? You know,
mm-hmm.
is somebody a killer in their essence, or is somebody a killer because of their physiology? And
yeah.
I think that's kind of what's being played out, especially recently. Like, we're seeing these walls kind of cracking, I think, with him. Like, especially, it's like an addict who gets a job at a bar. Like, you know, if you're an alcoholic or something like
sure.
that, like, they can resist drinking for a while, but if it's always around you, like, if he's surrounded by killers all the time,
mm-hmm.
does it grow back in that way? Or does it all, you know, does it find a way? Does nature find a way? You know, to quote Jurassic Park.
Wow. You went there.
Yeah.
He is clearly compelled by the mystery. Honestly, it reminded me of the BBC Sherlock in
uh-huh.
a super twisted way. The conversation of sociopath versus psychopath, which, again, I've read is relatively moot when it comes to semantics. There's not a hugely recognized or accepted difference within the mental health community. Not in a way to casually throw it around like, oh, I'm a sociopath, not a psychopath. It's fine. It's totally fine. But I do find that matter's compulsion to get involved, to help, because he knows that he can and he's the only one, mm-hmm. is very similar to the way that Sherlock is being written and the way that Benedict Cumberbatch is playing him. And I happen to really enjoy that show, and so perhaps that correlation is something else that is why the character in Bedlam is appealing to me. I think that inability to escape that part of his past, like he was clearly brilliant in a mm-hmm. super sick and twisted and deadly fucked up way.
Yeah.
So what does that mean he's left with now? Like what possible use to society does he have now that he cannot follow through on those visions of violence that he had?
Well, and humans though need release. Like we need release mm-hmm. of those urges, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's not even in the sexual way, it's that it's those urges have to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can, like just to go back to like a child molester, you can castrate a child molester, but the urges don't leave. And I think that's kind of what's happened with him. He's like he's been castrated,
mm-hmm.
so he doesn't have the ability to kill anymore, but he still needs to relieve those urges somehow. And I guess maybe by solving these crimes, that's a fulfillment in that way. But then does that just activate? Isn't like an addict in that way that you just keep escalating?
Yeah, it's like the nicotine patch, not the actual cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like I said at the beginning, though, I would never have given this a second thought, and I'm really glad that I'm super glad you made me read this book, Aaron, because I do think that there's a lot more to Bedlam than I had initially discounted. So for anybody who's listening and feeling kind of the same reluctance to dive into a book that is so violent and so disturbing, and it is, it truly is, there is a nugget there of humanity that I think is worth exploring.
Yeah, I'm glad you gave it a try.
And I'll keep reading it. I will. Not sure that we'll necessarily talk about it regularly, but I have added it to my list.
It's Cameron, which is Wazgo from Twitter. And my confession is I really like recap pages because I always forget what happened in the last issue.
Next up, we've got High Crimes number 4, written by Christopher Sabella, drawn by Ibrahim Mustafa, and published by Monkey Brain Comics, and featuring everyone's favorite addict, Zan Jansen.
I love this book, and I love Zan because she's such a mess. And
yeah,
it's it's so rare that you see a character in a comic book or in media in general that is so heavily using drugs of all shapes and sizes, but who is also depicted as suffering as a result. It is not glorified at all. I think that the intrigue of the story and all of the stuff that Chris and Ibrahim are doing with the strange agents and the Sullivan Mars, like the whole point of the story, right,
mm-hmm.
is so well crafted. But what I keep coming back to see is how much Zan, as this total hot mess of a protagonist, is going to be able to pull off surviving, much less dealing with all of these physical and functional obstacles in her way. Because she's a mess. There's no other word to describe her. It's delightful.
Yeah. So for people who maybe haven't checked this out yet, do we want to kind of recap just a little bit about what it's about?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So Zan Jensen was a former Olympic athlete who had a very, very public fail due to her past drug use and kind of hid herself away and has spent years running from that past identity and that embarrassment and that failure at an epic level and has settled in Kathmandu supporting climbers, the town, supporting climbers of Mount Everest. But Zan has found employment in a slightly less publicly acceptable, societal acceptable way, and she and her partner retrieve artifacts or bodies from the climbers who died as a result of their attempt to climb. And it's a reasonably lucrative business operation, possibly a little sketchy in terms of legality, but it's the families that contact them. They provide this very valuable service if a climber has died to bring the body down or bring the artifacts. And so they stumble on the body of Sullivan Mars, who is far, far more than he appears, and leads them down the path of interacting with your typical government or hypo governments, you know, sort of beyond international boundaries.
Black shadow government slash
don't mess with these guys, strange agents who Mars had been one himself and died in the process of trying to get away from them. And so now they're tracking down his demise and like the contacts that were made with him or his body most recently, which happens to be Zan at the forefront. And it's good stuff. It's fantastically like adrenalized and lots of intrigue and really lovely rendering. But like I said, Zan as a lead female character is nothing like you would expect the woman in this story to be. Like, she just does not have her shit together at all and has let one person after another down in the past and is like almost at her lowest point and being forced to step up in that situation and not die is incredible to watch, incredible to see how unable she is and yet very, very capable she is to do the things that she needs to do to get by.
Yeah. And it's all she's the, I guess she's a fallen hero in this. This is a tale of redemption, right?
Ah, another tale of redemption.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's a different kind of hero now, or has the potential to be a different kind of hero now than she was before.
Well, I'd say she's not a hero yet. You know, by issue 4,
she's
just trying to live. But I think that, I mean, the way I see it is that this is probably a tale of redemption. That, you know, she lost everything, and now this is a chance to get it back, strangely enough. And then,
I don't know.
To pull herself from the gutter.
She may be able to pull herself up from the gutter, but I don't think she's going to get back anything close to what she had before, because none of this is happening on the public stage. She might be able to get off the drugs and maybe be able to live without looking over her shoulder every 5 minutes at the people after her. But I think there's not a lot of glory in what she is attempting to do. It's survival at this point.
Yeah.
And maybe that's all she needs. She needs to get to the point where she can survive based on her and be responsible for her, because she hasn't been for so long.
Well, and there's such imagery, like the imagery of Everest in as a backdrop for this book, too. It's so layered in that way that, you know, what do you have to surmount in order to redeem yourself or to pull yourself out of this addiction and everything? It's like, you know, it's like climbing Everest, and that's what she's going to have to do. Yeah. So I really like that kind of you know, that imagery that they're using there. And just Everest itself is very fascinating from a Westerner's perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because like the people of in Nepal, it's a sacred mountain to them that all these Westerners, or all basically the idle rich at this point, you know, from all over the world,
right,
are come to climb on and of course leave their trash or their, you know, at this point, you know, their bodies, you know, literally litter their holy mountain. Yeah. And for them, like, they don't need the assistance. They live, they're people of the land. You know, like, I was even just talking to my dad today about Everest because I knew we were going to talk about this. And we were just talking about Everest in general. And, you know, like, the whole idea of it being this monumental feat, it is, but not for the people of the land there. And, it's such an amazing place, but the people who even can scale it can probably hardly fathom the experience because it's so taxing on their bodies. You know, it's almost right. Like they get to say they climbed it, but who gets to enjoy the experience? And I think in that way too, it's kind of interesting in terms of this plot. It's like none of it's enjoyable. It's like something you have to get through just to survive.
Sure, sure. You know, and she's about to tackle it without the rigorous preparation that some of the other Westerners. I mean, she's prepared in a different way, obviously, because she's in some ways been training for it much longer and much harder than these tourists, but. Her trip was put together under much less pleasant circumstances, and she is about to do it without a lot of her support system, and I mean both her friends, the few friends that she has, her boyfriend and her friends back in town, but obviously she's not traveling with any substances, I hope. Gosh, I guess we don't know that for sure, but I think she doesn't have any of that with her. So I guess like, maybe a little bit. I'm hoping that we're going to see that kind of physical as well as emotional withdrawal as she's literally summiting this like physical obstacle in front of her. I just think it's really unlike any other story that I've read in a long time. And I deliberately say story there, not just comic. I think it kind of transcends the medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a hyper version of something that's completely possible.
Right.
And it takes so much, and it takes so many aspects of life. I mean, we have these disgraced athletes because of the pressures that are put upon them.
Absolutely.
And the goal of Everest is such this kind of mythical thing in the Western world, and you know, drug addiction and summiting drug addiction is such a, you know, it's such a ubiquitous part of life, you know, of kind of a first world life too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on, and it's all happening very. I think it's easy to overlook those aspects to it because it's such high action, you know, in these first four
right.
issues. Which is great because then you go back and you kind of think about it because while you're in it, you're kind of along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I enjoyed a lot. I'm glad you do too.
I do. And we should point out that it's very easy to get caught up on this book. It is published by Monkey Brain Comics, available digitally. Each issue is only 99 cents on Comixology. So as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason, no excuses.
Just yep.
Go check it out because it's really very unique. And
you get a lot of story for the price of their
charge.
Yeah, you do.
This is a true confession that's been bothering me for some time now. I'm glad I have a chance to get off my mind. 3 years now it's been bothering me. When the Avengers was released, I went to work, couldn't get off. So I left, quote, at lunchtime. And called in and said that I had an accident on myself and I had to go home and change my pants. Figured they wouldn't question that excuse and went in and saw the Avengers.
It's time for my favorite part of the show.
Oh yeah? What time is it?
We get to talk about sex. And also the fifth issue of Sex, published by Image Comics. With story by Joe Casey and art by Peter Kowalski, which I'm sure I butchered. Feel
That's
free to
good.
Call in and tell me how to say it for real.
Let's see. I don't even know where to begin with this book. There's so much going on. And I think for a lot of people, I guess we can kind of give a little bit of recap because for a lot of people, I think they're overlooking this book because it's not – it's not as outwardly like how High Crimes is very action driven. This is almost stifled in that, and I think that almost has a lot to do with what's going on with the book. It's essentially the story of a Batman kind of analog coming back to a Gotham City analog. You know, these are all kind of taking these aspects that we're familiar with and making a new world of it. It's almost the premise being if Batman came back to Gotham to run Wayne Enterprises but not be Batman anymore, and how do you learn to be a normal member of society, and what goes on in society without that presence anymore? You know, what would happen to Gotham without Batman? And I'm still really enjoying this book, and I see a lot of people kind of complaining about it because I don't think they're reading it in terms of as a character study the way it should be. And
yeah,
it should
absolutely.
Be a slow burn. You know, saying like at the very beginning here that it's the antithesis of High Crimes, and that there isn't this action going on because it's so restrained. And it's like, I feel like the dam is about to burst at any moment, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much of that imagery going on.
I think it's really interesting that you're using words like restrained and stifled, because we would be remiss in not mentioning how graphic the first couple issues have been, almost gratuitously so. And I don't throw that word around lightly, but this story could have been told maybe less effectively, but it could have been told without some of the extremely, like, beyond provocative sexual imagery and explicit visuals.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that they lend credence to the way that the entire city has kind of fallen apart as Simon has become a civilian, and the far reaches of that implication of, like, losing your superhero, and that's a lot of fun. But I think that in a way that has turned people off, and that it maybe set the readers up for thinking it was going to be different than it is. And I agree with you. I think this is a character study, and I think it is fascinating because of how rarely we see that. It's not exactly a fall from grace, but it is a return after a shift in roles, or and a relatively catastrophic shift in roles with the death of a close friend as well to complicate things. I love what is happening with Simon right now, even though he clearly doesn't. And I think it's good stuff.
But I think some, you know, to go to the gratuity of it, it's definitely intentional. It's to be provocative, but it's also all the really graphic stuff, like in this last issue, you know, the blowjob in the bathroom,
right,
is incomplete. You know, his enjoyment of, say, getting drunk is incomplete in that way because he's so drunk, you know, he can't be in the moment. Like, it's everything is never, there's no release to it, if that makes sense. So
I mean,
I think
that's my experience with blowjobs in bathrooms personally. But
oh yeah,
yeah.
You want to go into detail about that?
Well, I just think that it's not really the appropriate venue. I mean, who actually has fun there? Come on.
In a bathroom?
In a kind of nasty bar with whoever has been there before you, and the stench and the it's just not it's not atmospherically where I think people are at their best.
No, but it is a low point. I guess you it's a kind of like, can one revel in sinking so low? Too?
Not in Simon's case, no.
No,
and
right.
Maybe not in my own either, but...
Maybe not. But when you have the character of the old man, who is the opposite, right? He's
Absolutely.
The Joker analog in that way.
Yeah.
And that he does. He takes things to the lowest point.
Absolutely. Not only does he revel in it, but then, I mean, he shoots her when he's done. So.
But he also doesn't enjoy it. He's bored.
But his release comes in a different way. I think that's clear.
Right, but he doesn't have it anymore because I think his release was probably the battles with Simon when he was the superhero, and
sure.
that no longer exists. There's that void. So you know, like the force is broken in that way. You know, there's no yin and there's no yang.
Right. So when he shoots the prostitute in the face, it's like a really lame attempt to recapture that thrill that he got when in the heyday he was battling. I don't even remember what Simon's. Do we know what Simon's costumed alter ego was?
Yes, and I don't have that available right now. So
it's honestly, I think that speaks to how it's much more his story, right? Like
it is the
after effect of that hero no longer with us, and this is just the guy, and this guy's got a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
The drinking to blackout is never a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking for release and not finding it, and his arch nemesis from the past is in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of searching and not a lot of finding, and I think it's great.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more to come. I just think for some people, 5 issues isn't fast enough. And knowing Joe Casey though, and these new series of Joe Casey's books, it's going to take probably 12 before we really get some sort of understanding more of this bigger world. And I'm fine with that because every issue kind of leaves me more to think about. And I think there's a lot that people should be thinking about this book that they're overlooking. It's not just the sexuality. It's also, it's this relationship book. So there's also the aspect of like the Catwoman analog.
Right.
Who they never consummated their relationship, so she's unfulfilled too. And the Robin analog too, like he's rudderless because his mentor is gone and abandoned him. You know, he wants to be the hero that the city needs, but the man who should have been teaching him to do that left, and abandoned him.
That's putting so much on Simon. I mean, it's really no wonder he kind of cracked.
Yeah.
Because he's got the relationship pressure in all of these like interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has like the literal weight of the city on his, or had the weight of the city on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are very few people I know in life who have kind of career pressure and interpersonal pressure who are happy, who have the weight of all of those responsibilities, and then that happens kind of in all of the other parts of their life where they're looked to be the leader. Something's got to give. It's like one or the other, or sometimes all of those things kind of crack at the same time, because it's a lot. It's a lot for people to balance and to handle in a healthy and positive way. Or you see them looking for outlets that are like wildly unhealthy. And then we start delving into the world of Zan Jensen.
You're right. And that's, I think, what's happening for him. He's looking for a way to sublimate the urges to be the hero. You know, it's the same thing like going back to Bedlam. It's the same thing. It's like, if you don't have a way to process the traumas of the past, and the only way you've learned to is through murder or being a savior, they're two sides of the same coin.
Right.
Where does that energy go? And you either dissipate it by drug abuse or sublimate it through, sex abuse or whatever it is. You find a way. The energy has to go somewhere. It can't just be destroyed, So I think that's what we've been seeing in this book. It's that, is it inevitable that he returns to be the hero? Or
I don't think so.
I don't know. Or does he implode, or does he destroy himself in resisting that again? Or does he find a way to grow? Like, can people heal themselves? And I think that's a question in almost all three of these books this week is, are we doomed to repeat these cycles, or how do we fix ourselves, or how do we get fixed?
Man, it suddenly got super low and down in here.
Well, all three of these books are pretty heavy. There's a lot going on.
They are.
Yeah, but it's a lot of good stuff to think about, because I think it applies to everyone's life in some respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to go on day by day without ever having to really, you know, address these most of the time until you have to.
Right. And then the dam bursts and everything falls apart, and then it's much, much more difficult to climb out of it in that case, rather than maybe dealing with things in smaller doses or as they come, you know, one piece at a time.
Yeah, and people are rarely proactive. We're usually reactive.
Sure.
And I think that's what a lot of these books are also kind of looking at, too. So I think it's interesting from a literature standpoint for us to read these and think about those things in terms of our own lives and how we can apply them. You know, that's
where the drama comes in. Otherwise, it's not a very interesting story.
Right.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But that's why we relate to those mm-hmm. characters, and that's why we are sort of doomed to that same repetition, albeit not at the same scale in our own lives.
Yeah.
At least that's what I've come to decide about myself. You probably have all your shit together.
Oh, yeah, I'm 100%.
No, I think that's the balance, right? You find that you relate to, but obviously not so much as, I'm not a psychopath. I'm not a murderous killer, you know, on like the run from secret agents and so on and so forth. But I think that it's the human part of this that is like so frighteningly appealing, because we all could be. We all could have been those extremes. It's just we've been able to temper it, or we've surrounded ourselves with people who keep helping us to temper it, and that's the key.
Yep, I guess so. Well, I think we've beaten that prostitute to death.
Oh, man.
It's a good way to end, right?
Not really, but...
Oh, okay. I did not read Batman or Superman or Green Lantern or any DC or Marvel comics for years. We're talking like 15 years, because I thought they were too mainstream and I wouldn't like them. Of course, that has changed, and I got off my high horse, and I'm very glad that I did. But I missed out on so much comic reading, and that is my nerd confession.
Well, on a lighter note, I don't know. Actually, I have no lighter note. Now I'm really depressed. I just want to drink.
Oh. It's also thematically appropriate for all of the books.
Absolutely. Hopefully, by the end of this show, everyone here is going to want to drink.
Oh,
that's the goal of every episode, right?
Should have put that at the beginning. Like,
right.
Pour your drinks. Don't try this at home. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Well, on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show, or at least you're not too depressed. And every week we promise to try to get better, at least until we've reached a mediocre plateau. let's see. You can find our links to get a hold of us. It's all on the website, comicstherapy.com, or just rewind the show to the very beginning. You can hear it all again. So if you can, please subscribe to the show through whatever service you prefer. If you're on iTunes, we could really use more ratings and reviews. It really helps the show get kind of bumped up and visible to other people. So if you have a chance, we'd really appreciate it. Until next week, don't drink too much. Don't do too many drugs. But, you know, have a lot of sex. And of course,
something I can always get behind.
And of course, read all the comics. See you next week.
Then after the show is the
after party.
Yeah.
And after the party is the
hotel lobby.
Yeah.
Around about four, you gotta
clear the lobby.
Then
yeah.
Take it to your room and
somebody.
Can I get a
doo-doo.
Can I get a
beep, beep.
Running her hands through my fro.
Yeah.
Bouncing on 24. Come on, why they saying
check it out.
Yellow remix to ignition. Hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama ruling that body. Got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum. I'm like, so what? I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend. Baby, I'm about to have some fun.
Hello, Comics Therapy. I have a nerd confession. I prefer Power Girl with a boob window, and I hate it when they try to put Wonder Woman in pants.
Hello to Comic Therapy. This is Owen calling from Panel Culture. I'm sorry if it's hard to hear. I'm in the middle of a rainstorm right now. But I just wanted to tell you my confessional, which is I feel like I'm getting kind of tired of Batman. I know this is sacrilege amongst comics fans, and I assure you I'm a huge Batman fan. I grew up dressing as Batman every year for Halloween as a kid. I love Batman. But, I don't know. I'm sort of getting tired of the assumption that Batman is the greatest superhero in the world. I get kind of sick of the way the fanboys treat him as if, like, Batman wins at everything. It gets kind of tiresome. I also just don't really like the current humorless, grim and gritty Batman that seems to go to right now. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is it crazy? Am I crazy? I'm not going to stop reading Batman comics forever, but I feel like I kind of need a break. How about you?
Hey kids, this is Sean calling in. Dark geek secrets. I really don't have any. I kind of wear my geek medals with pride, my nerd stripes, all that good stuff. A lot of people know that I'm a big, huge nerd that I like Legos and comic books and most of the stuff that's all posted on Facebook. So, of course, everybody has to make fun of me. But one secret I would have, and it's not really a secret because if you get me talking about it, I'll talk about it, but the fact that the Watchmen and Crisis are like must-read books for any comic book nerd, I have a huge problem with. If you're first starting out and people are like, you gotta read it. Well, I've read them a couple times. Watchmen is dated, and sure, it broke some of the lines that we needed. But really, I mean, I can't go back to it as often. Before Watchmen has made me kind of want to revisit it. But other than that, you know, it's just not the end all of comic book. Not all comic book readers, new ones, should have to read that. It isn't required reading. And that's the same kind of problem I have Crisis on Infinite Earths. I'm not like bashing DC here. I'm just stating that Crisis on Infinite Earths was good, but it just towards the end, it lost me. And I was so confused by it because it's like they have everything fixed and then they had to, like, I don't know. It was, both stories are good in their own right. At the time, they would have been fantastic. But for me to have to tell someone to read that, I guess that would be my secret, is that I'm not that comic book guy that goes, you gotta read these. I mean, I'll tell people they gotta read Secret War, but that's because it's fun. And it's, you know, it's fun. But, yeah, that's it. I wish I had a deeper, darker secret to give to AA here, but I just don't have one. But that would be it. Watchmen, dated, Crisis, not that required reading. All right, kids. Thanks for inviting us listeners to come and join your show. If I get picked, awesome. If I don't, I understand it. It makes sense. Later.